from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. When we talk about the criminal justice system and criminal justice reform, we often talk about state and federal prisons. But our local jails have a far broader reach, admitting almost 20 times the annual prison intake. If you want to solve Chicago, Ferguson, Baltimore, and a whole lot more, you have to look local. A new push is on to keep jails from being warehouses for the poor, mentally ill, and addicted. This hour on Point, reform from the bottom up, fixing our jails. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Do you know what's going on at your local jail? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK, or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first from Chicago is Lori Garducci, Director of Justice Reform at the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. They are funding the Safety and Justice Challenge, investing $75 million, most of it in 11 locales, Milwaukee, New Orleans, Charleston, Philadelphia, Spokane, and more, to create fairer, more effective local justice systems around local jails. Lori Garducci, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Why are you focusing on jails?
So as we looked at the landscape of what was happening with respect to the growth in incarceration and the problems in our justice system, we saw a great deal of attention being paid to sentencing reforms in prisons at the state and the federal level. But overlooked was a major driver and component of over-incarceration in the United States, which is what happens in our country's jails. It's very much a local problem, requires local solutions, but it's national in its scope.
We'll dig into what's going on there. You've got a big initiative going on here. You're pouring money into 20 communities maybe in total, but 11 where you're really putting some significant resources. Take us through those. You've got Charleston County, South Carolina. I guess that's Charleston and North Charleston. We've seen the problems there. Harris County, Texas. Is that Houston country?
Yes, that's Houston.
Lucas County, Ohio is Toledo?
Cincinnati,
okay.
I'm sorry, Toledo.
Toledo.
I apologize, Toledo.
Milwaukee County, New Orleans, New York City, Philadelphia, Pima County. Is that Tucson, Arizona, more or less?
Yes.
Spokane, the whole state of Connecticut, and St. Louis County, Missouri, where we've seen lots of issues. You're working with them. I guess you put out a call saying if you want to reform your criminal justice around your local jail, tell us what you would do. And these were, I guess, the winners.
Well, we went through a long process to identify the 11 that received the larger awards for implementation at this stage of their work and the 9 that we're continuing to support to bring along on the path to reform. MacArthur released a request for proposals last February, and we didn't know what the response would be because while it certainly had identified in the landscape of the need for criminal justice reform, the need to focus on jails, as you noted, the 12 million admissions, the vast majority of whom reside in jail pre-trial, over 60%, 75% are there for non-serious, non-violent offenses. The stays in jail had increased over time. As you noted, the burden falls disproportionately on low-income people and people of color. On the other hand, the problems and issues hadn't received the attention we thought they deserved. So when we issued the RFP, the request for proposals, mm-hmm. we weren't sure how many jurisdictions were going to apply. And we were very gratified to see that while nationally maybe the problem hadn't received the attention, 191 jurisdictions applied to receive support for developing plans to safely reduce the misuse and overuse of jails. And from that, we selected the 20 that went through a very deliberate and structured strategic planning process where they had to map their system, look at the drivers of their jail population, examine their data. And moreover, they had to approach this as a system in that you can push on one part of the system, the front door, let's say initial contact with law enforcement. But it proceeds through all of these key decision points. How quickly does the prosecutor decide to press charges? How long does it take a case to go to trial? So all of those steps along the way push people into jails where they don't often need to stay because they don't pose a risk to public safety. They will show up for their court date, or they can't make low-money bail. So we worked with the 20. The proposals came back for increased funding on the part of MacArthur, and we selected the 11. And the 11 were selected because they represent jails across the country. As you noted, they spread across the country. They're diverse in their size. They're different in the ways in which their jail and their court system are organized. So you have a state like Connecticut that runs not only their jails and their prisons, so the governor's taking the lead. In other jurisdictions, it will be the chief judge. In other jurisdictions, it might be the elected DA. So we thought that it was very important to take into account the diversity of jails, how they're administered and structured, the different regions and demographics of the country, the different resources they have at their disposal. So we have small jails with as well as large jails. So you have jails like in New York City, which have substantial numbers, over 8,000 beds. And then you have the smaller jails like in Spokane, Washington, where their jail is less than 1,000.
You say that overuse and misuse of jails in America has reached a crisis point. It's one of the greatest drivers of over-incarceration in the U.S., often warehousing people for nonviolent offenses, your language here. And certainly the numbers are large. I saw a report from last year saying about 730,000 people locked up in local jails at a given moment there, including many, many nonviolent offenders, many simply too poor to post bail. The average length of stay is a stretch from 14 days three decades ago to 23 days now. That's a lot of people. It's a lot of time, but it's not that many days. Why does it matter? I mean, 23 days compared to 20 years in prison can seem short when you look at it.
So what we've seen is research that has shown the toxic effects of even a short stay in jail. So think about it, how lives are disrupted. It can cost lost wages because you miss your job. You could lose your job.
Yep.
It could interrupt your treatment if you're in treatment for health care reasons or for mental health or substance use issues. It can also interrupt or interfere with your familial obligations. If a parent is locked up, you know, who takes care of the children? They could end up with social services. We also know that people, when they stay in jail and then do appear for their court date, if charged similarly, they're more likely to get a sentence of prison. And if they're going to prison, they'll have longer stays.
I mean, clearly it's a source of anguish to a lot of people. I saw a report also here saying that suicide in jails, county jails, and this is a big issue in all of our incarcerated population, but in jails, seven times the rate of that for convicted inmates, I guess, in prison, much higher and rising in jails. People feel this anguish.
Well, it goes back to the kinds of offenses that drive people into jail. So people who are homeless, who are committing crimes of poverty because they suffer from mental health and substance use issues. So we know that disproportionately serious mental illness affects men and women in jails, four times for men and six times higher for women. So it's not – many of the people who end up jail are suffering from those mental health and substance use disorders, and it represents a failure of other systems that are failing to provide the services and the supports that they need.
You say they've lost sight of their intended purposes, America's jails. What do you mean?
So jails were initially intended to hold people pre-trial, where there was concern that they would fail to make their court date or they posed a risk to public safety. And instead, what we have is a broken system that holds people because they can't make money bail or they don't pose a risk to public safety, but there are no alternatives to keep them in the community to ensure that they are held accountable for their offenses. In many cases, as you noted, the offenses don't pose a risk to public safety, but we don't have a scheme for determining who's at risk in terms of public safety and who can remain in the community with some supervision or just with a reminder about when it's time to show up for your court date.
I mean, you've got people in there for not because they can't pay their traffic tickets.
That's right. So what happens is that if you have an accumulation of traffic tickets, a bench warrant goes out. You could be stopped for a broken taillight. Now, you might be driving across town because that's the way you get to your job, and you haven't had the money to pay the traffic tickets, but now there's an outstanding warrant for your arrest. And so instead of being able to come up with a payment system to meet your financial obligations, you're locked up at greater expense than often your fines and fees.
We're going to look at some of the solutions that people are going to be testing under your program. Can you draw a line from what we've seen in Ferguson, in Baltimore, in Chicago, where you're speaking from, to problems around the jails, Lori?
So many of the tragic incidents that we've witnessed with respect to police-community relations are also emblematic of what we see with our jails. As I said earlier, this is a systems reform initiative. While jails are the metric that we're using, the breakdown occurs at every decision point. And so those jurisdictions have recognized the challenges and the problems that they have and are taking steps to develop alternatives to arrests. Triage centers in Charleston, South Carolina, for example. Early screening for mental health and substance use issues in places like Milwaukee. So in addition, training law enforcement in about implicit bias, the need to treat all citizens fairly.
Lori, can you please stand by in Chicago? There's much more we want to learn here. I'm very glad you're with us. Lori Gardukhi is with us from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation Safety and Justice Challenge. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about tackling America's criminal justice problems by tackling the problems around our local jails, a new push to change over-incarceration and bad practice by changing the way we think about and use our jails. You can join us this hour. Do you know what's going on in and around your local jail? Are you surprised to hear America's jail population has tripled since the 1980s, that jail admissions are 20 times prison admissions in this country? Are we misusing our jails? Are we too often locking people up because they're too poor to pay a fine, too poor to post bail? We're at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Lori Gardukhi is with us from the MacArthur Foundation's Safety and Justice Challenge. They've just signed up 20 communities, but 11 in particular, with grants between $1 million, $3-4 million to, over a period of years, reform the way their jails are working. They've all committed to a reduction between 15 and 34, 30, 35% of the jail population, looking to emphasize community engagement, collaboration with local law enforcement, corrections officials, prosecutors, defenders, judges. There are lots of stakeholders around our jails, but the over-incarceration issue may have its root right there. Lori Gardukhi in Chicago, give us a sense of the kinds of measures that these communities, Charleston, Milwaukee, New Orleans, and right on down, Philadelphia and more, have proposed to try under your program.
So because the jurisdictions vary in terms of their capacity and the drivers of their jail population, the solutions that they've proposed, data-driven, because they looked at who's in jail, how long they stay, and whether they come back, the solutions vary, but there are some very common themes. There's an interest in reducing the jail admissions of people with mental health and substance use issues. So some of that is at the very initial point of contact with law enforcement and providing law enforcement with an alternative to bringing someone to jail to a triage center. That's what we're seeing being proposed in Charleston, for example. Other jurisdictions are going to put greater resources into having crisis intervention teams. So rather than have police deal with the problem, a team of individuals will come to address the issues with respect to someone who's suffering from serious mental illness. Another common area for the different jurisdictions, is to look at what happens pre-trial. So our standardized, scientifically validated risk assessment tools use to determine who poses a risk to public safety or who won't show up to their court date. And at different levels of risk, people of low risk can be simply reminded by technology, perhaps, an innovation in that regard, mm-hmm. or linked up to electronic monitoring if they're moderate risk. So we see different solutions for the nature of the problem in different places. Another major area in many jurisdictions is simply speeding up the process, how long it takes for someone to go to trial. Those kinds of delays have also increased dramatically over the years, which has led to the longer stays in jail.
So a lot of this is just about people not going to jail in the first place, interventions that would get them to other kinds of help or other kinds of monitoring.
Right. As well as if, in fact, they do need to be in jail, shortening how long it takes them to go to trial.
We've got a lot of callers for you. If I may, begin to bring them in. Jan in Aiken, South Carolina. You're on with Lori Garducci in Chicago.
Hi, Tom.
Hi,
Lori.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a son who is currently in the Charleston jail, and he's there. Our state has a law where if you have three property crimes, no matter the size, you are going to be tried now as a felon. He's been in the jail probably since November. He's basically homeless. He does not think he has a mental problem. He does not think he has an addiction problem. He has been in several treatment facilities. He's been in several jails.
Jan, since November is a long time. Why is he in jail?
Yeah. He was picked up for trying to use a credit card which had been dropped on a sidewalk. He was trying to steal two packs of cigarettes and a beer.
So for two packs of cigarettes and a beer, he's in jail since November. What's he waiting on? Why so long?
Well, I don't know. I think it's because he's had two other property crimes. One was he tried to steal two beers in a different town in South Carolina. And another one was some small, again, less than $20, and he never got out of the store with any of the three things.
Jan, I'm so glad you're on the line. Lori, what do you make of this case, and how might it fit in to your thinking about the way we use our jails?
So this is a classic example of how other service systems have failed your son. And what Charleston is going to be instituting with the support of our grant and the planning process they went through is a triage center. So your son never would have made it to jail. Instead, they would have assessed his mental health and substance use issues. They would have looked at what kinds of supports he had in the community. If he was living on the street, they'd try to find him supportive housing. And then they would help him comply and participate in treatment in the community, rather than using a scarce resource like jails that should be used for people who pose a risk to public safety. Law enforcement will be trained to how to identify people like your son who have these other issues that should not be addressed by the criminal justice system.
So you're looking to back off of punishment or incarceration as the first answer?
Yes. So the jails should be used to protect public safety and to ensure that people show up for their trial. There are a number of different ways to accomplish that. And what we're hoping with the Safety and Justice Challenge is to demonstrate in jails that are representative of what we see around the country who have aligned their different system players to take on this challenge, look at their data, and adopt what we know are better practices than what we see in play. In the past, however, those practices like diverting people with mental health issues, of using risk assessment tools, of speeding up the time to trial, they've been done piecemeal and fragmented and haven't often been driven by the close examination of the data and information that a system needs. Mm. And that will be something this initiative will certainly emphasize.
Jen, we wish your son good luck. That's a long time for two packs of cigarettes and a beer since November in jail. But Lori, what do you say to old school minds thinking, well, the fear of incarceration is supposed to work as a deterrent here. So it's too bad they're in jail, but they shouldn't be stealing in the first place. And, you know, it's the fear of that that people had hoped would deter crime.
So what we know from research is that the incarceration is neither a specific deterrent for that individual or a general deterrent for the population. And often the punishment of jail, loss of liberty, you fail to remember that person is still a citizen and should be treated with dignity and respect. So you both have disproportionate punishment given the harm or the risk to public safety. You have people treated unfairly and unjustly, which they experience, then subject to inhumane and unfair conditions in the jail. So you just have these compounding effects that start with jails, which then leads to a mistrust and loss of confidence in the system. So incarceration isn't the answer. We know that it doesn't contribute to public safety in the way that many people still hold up. That was addressed in a National Academy of Sciences report that talked about the growth in incarceration and what return we've seen in public safety.
And pretty soon, if you're not careful, you've got a situation like Ferguson. Just a little sound here from back in August 2014, people in the streets, Jeremy Roan telling reporters he was out because he wanted to send a message that things have to change.
I'm a father. I have two boys. No way am I going to raise them to be in fear of the very people who they pay to protect them.
Callers for you, Lori Garduki. A Bill is calling from Manitowoc, Wisconsin. Bill, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Rural Wisconsin, jails are notorious, and nobody realizes it until the Netflix came out about the Stephen Avery situation. But I wanted to tell you, I witnessed a Native American being psychologically tortured in the Manitowoc County Jail, and I would consider that to be of the statute of Abu Ghraib type of a torture. Calumet County, the neighboring county, actually incarcerated somebody for stealing food from a Walmart, and jail time for being hungry should not be something that we tolerate in this country.
What do you mean by psychological torture that you described there, Bill? Bill? We may have lost Bill. Okay, it can be tough. We got that. Bill, I appreciate your call. Let's hold that, Laura, and get one more in Oklahoma City. Gwen, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I went to the Oklahoma City jail for 13 hours because of a clerical error. And when I was there, I was in a room with 20 other women, and all of them were nonviolent drug offenders. And I kept thinking with all these women that they ought to be in like a rehab or in a treatment program, not in the jail, especially when you have to go through traumatic things like being searched and being yelled at and, you know, being, you know, looked down upon by all the guards. And I was there because of a mistake in paperwork, and they were screaming at me, telling me that I was, like, a shame and I should be, like, I don't know, a more responsible citizen of society.
Yeah. Wow, you saw it from the other side because of a clerical error, and it's the drug war that jumped out at you. Lori Garduki, if you'd stand by in Chicago, I want to bring in a public defender, chief defender at the Defender Association of Philadelphia, one of the cities that's looking at jail reform. Keir Bradford Gray is with us. Keir, thanks so much for being here today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
What's the impact of spending time in jail?
Well, I think what the I'm sorry if I mispronounced your name, Ms. Garducci, just said is very poignant. What return on investment have we had in terms of public safety by the way we use our prison systems to, I guess, deter behavior? And we've seen that we haven't had much, not only the economic impact that we've had by overusing our systems, but we've also had a extreme social impact by the overuse of our prison systems. I think what people don't understand is when someone goes into prison and they have they're connected to services on the outside, they lose all that once they're in prison for an unhealthy length of stay, meaning unhealthy where it's not long enough to serve any kind of lesson. Taxpayers are paying for this person to be in jail and having to get medical treatment, mental health treatment, or whatever it is. And they are losing certain services. So when they come out, they're more desperate than when they went in. And I don't think that we have looked at it from the social impact that we've had on using jail the way we have. And I know that the saying is true. We can't incarcerate our way to public safety. And we're seeing that. That's why we're taking a real close look at our policies and seeing where we can make more sense of what we're doing.
Philadelphia is in on it. Let's get one more. Milwaukee is in on this new push to improve the way we use our jails and cut down the jail population in this country. With us right now from Milwaukee in Wisconsin, Chief Judge Maxine White. Chief Judge of Wisconsin's first judicial district includes Milwaukee County Chair, the Milwaukee Community Justice Council, which drafted the proposal to the MacArthur Foundation, which they're going to be acting on in this time ahead. Judge White, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you, Ms. Garducci, on behalf of all of the people of Wisconsin.
What do you hope to accomplish in Milwaukee County with this initiative, Judge White?
Very much what Ms. Garducci has said and the public defender from Philadelphia commented on. We're using significant resources for a population that should not be in jail in the first place. I'll give you one example, Tom, and that is in a period of 1 year, we spent about $5 million on about 85 Milwaukee County citizens who traveled through our system significantly because of mental health problems. And so the police would respond to calls from the community, which are for a two-year period was nearly 44% of all of the dispatches coming into the Milwaukee Police Department mm-hmm. for mental health service. So they would go out, bring the person down to the criminal justice system. We would learn that they had been at the mental health facility, had been, you know, picked up for families unable to regulate them on their medication.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, they ended up in the criminal justice system where we spent significant amounts of money, and it also detracted from our ability to then deal with people who really scare us. These people at the lower level, about 33,000 plus bookings a year are in our jurisdiction arise from misdemeanor obstructing, which is really related to the cops showing up and them not wanting to cooperate because of mm-hmm. substance or other addictive problems.
And pretty soon you're into this whole warehousing
right.
territory.
Absolutely.
So what's Milwaukee County going to do here to try and address that, Judge White?
Very much what some of the other jurisdictions have already commented about. We think if we attack the problem on the front end, for example, we have the full cooperation of our largest police department. We're going to spend a lot of our resources at the front end, hoping that they will be able to take these individuals rather than directly to jail without pass and go, that they would go to a book and release center, have some collaborative effects with the clinical community for mental health and substance addictions, and make a front-end decision as to where is the best place to launch our resources. Is it the mental health community or the criminal justice community? We think that that will have a direct impact on people not coming down to the jail in the first place. And even if they do make it down to the jail, the DA, who is also cooperating in our effort, will have some type of stabilization two-week period program where rather than make the charge right away, sort of make a deal with the person, cooperate with your program, your plan for about 2 weeks, you know, regulate your mental health status, regulate your homelessness, get other resources in, and maybe the charge won't even be made. And even if it is made, the comment that Ms. Garducci made about how significant it is to just use the jail to ensure people to show up for trial, these people are not a threat to public safety. And so constitutionally, it's a misuse of jail just to warehouse them because we don't have the resources allocated in the right direction to take care of the real problem.
I want to ask you about that issue of resource allocation and whether you're confident that communities who want to have fewer people in jails will step up with the other applications of resources that might be required to make that possible. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at WBUR.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about tackling America's criminal justice problems by tackling the problems around our local jails. Big new initiative just been launched. 11 cities right out front in it, or communities, including the state of Connecticut. Not all cities here. MacArthur Foundation is funding it. $75 million. $1 million, $2 million, $3 million, almost $4 million for some of these to look at how they are channeling people into jail, handling those people, and see if there's not a better way. A way, among other things, to cut down on the over-incarceration that is plaguing the United States top to bottom. You can join us this hour. What do you think? If we rethink jails, do we rethink the kind of policing that got us in so much hot water recently? To rethink jails, do we have to rethink the way we how we treat the mentally ill, the addicted, the poor? And police, judges, public defenders, prosecutors, how would you fix the world around our jails? Chief Judge Maxine White is with us from Milwaukee. They're one of the cities, county in this case, it's moving on this front. Kira Bradford Gray with us from Philadelphia, public defender, head of the Defender Association of Philadelphia. And Lori Garducci is with us from Chicago, director of the MacArthur Foundation Safety and Justice Challenge, 5-year, $75 million initiative to figure out how we can use our jails more sensibly, how we can cut down on those populations, not just warehouse the poor, the mentally ill, the drug addicted there. Kira Bradford Gray, here's a comment I've got online from New Orleans. It says, New Orleans Public Defender's Office is in crisis mode because of the high amount of people being arrested and the lack of resources in public defenders. They've said they actually won't take any more defender's office, won't take any more cases. So people who can't afford bail are left in jail indefinitely without access to a lawyer. So people have been in jail awaiting hearings for months. God forbid any of them are innocent, our listener writes, stuck in limbo. Meanwhile, judges are releasing some prisoners charged with violent offenses because there are no attorneys to take their cases. Does this sound at all familiar to you, Keir?
Well, it sounds familiar in the public defender world because for years, public defender systems have been under-resourced. So I do support Chief Defender Derwin Bunton's decision not to take any more cases if he can't provide his constitutional mandate to provide quality representation. However, I really think that the policymakers and the stakeholders need to get together and provide another source of funding for those people whom the public defender cannot take because they're so underfunded and under-resourced. It's not good enough just to say we're going to leave people in jail because we have no other creative solution. Good government is supposed to work for people. And one of the comments that I would like to make about what we need to do to make sure that we are living up to this challenge of using our prison systems wisely and having a system that's fundamentally fair, fiscally responsible, and promotes public safety, is that we as policymakers, we as stakeholders, have to look at our own policies and understand why are we doing this? Are we doing this because this is what we've always done? Are we doing this because of the public misperception of what we should be doing and who the people that we are servicing or putting in our jails are, or the threat that they may pose? There's a lot of education that has to be done around this issue so that people are comfortable or not complacent with the way we use our jails and comfortable with using other resources in the communities to do so. So I would say this with respect to the callers or the person online's question. When a public defender office cannot provide adequate representation due to not having the resources available, it is up to those policymakers and that government to provide alternatives. And that's what they need to be doing for those who are sitting in jail without attorneys that don't pose a threat to public safety.
Pony up the resources, look at reform, but at the same time, there's still a real public safety issue here. As Lori Garducci says, you got to keep that in mind as well. Let me go to Connor in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Connor, you're on the air. Thank you very much for calling.
You bet. I just got a couple of comments. First of all, about Lori. Seems like somewhat of a Pollyannist attitude coming across there. I don't know how many hours she spent in a patrol car working graveyard shifts. She might want to invest some time in a state trooper's patrol car or deputy sheriff, something like that.
Are you in law enforcement, Connor, may I ask?
Mm-hmm. I'm a Tulsa County sheriff's deputy.
Mm-hmm. What would she learn? What do you want to convey about what might be seen there?
That there's a lot of bad folks out there, lots of bad folks, and there's a lot more folks out there that are tired as H-E-double-L of getting victimized by these other bad folks. So let me just briefly just cover a couple things, and that was one caller called in and said her kid was in jail in Kentucky or something?
South Carolina.
Since November, and she didn't know why. Mm-hmm. Why he's still there? Well, obviously he's still there because he's not able to post bond. Okay, so that's the deal there. And then the other guy calls and said she was in Oklahoma City and got arrested by a paperwork error.
Yep.
Well, that can happen with a state computer systems.
Yep.
Sometimes it does happen. But it was funny. She was bemoaning the fact that she was yelled at and made, feel bad and all
mm-hmm.
that stuff.
Yep.
Hello, that's jail. That's what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to be a miserable, lousy experience, so you don't want to go back.
What about people who can't afford to post bond?
Well, that's just it. Oklahoma County and Tulsa County are starting to test a deal, which has already failed massively, where if the people don't have money, then they get an OR bond. You know what that is?
No, I don't.
Own recognizance.
Okay, yeah, you promised to pay it.
You go before the judge. The judge says, so you're dirt poor, you don't have any money, you can't post a bond. That's right. Okay, well, we're overcrowded, and it doesn't matter that you've got 38 prior misdemeanors and a couple of felonies on your record. We're going to let you go because, you shouldn't be in jail because you're poor and you commit crimes. So we'll see you later, and you come back for your court date.
And please...
That's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
They don't come back for the court date.
Hey, Connor, stand by. I want to put you directly in conversation with Lori Garducci here, because she's looking at this nationally, and we hear what you're saying. Lori, speak to these issues. Here's Connor. He's a deputy in Tulsa, and says jails A ought to be miserable, and he doesn't trust these alternatives to putting up the bond.
So, Connor, I respect what you do as a law enforcement agent, and I know that you put your life on the line every day you're out there on the road, so I appreciate what you do in the name of public service. And so what we would hope to do with this initiative and what many of the jurisdictions have proposed is to come up with alternatives. While I understand how you think if jails are inhumane places that people won't want to come back, in many cases people are placed in that position because they suffer from mental health and substance use issues. They're homeless. So there have been services failures that we're not blaming the criminal justice for. But we are hopeful that the criminal justice system can cooperate with other service systems so that you have alternatives to bringing them to jail so that you don't continuously have to recycle them through the jail. We also think that jails can be more humane places so that people are put on the path to recovery, so they won't commit the kinds of crimes that bring them to law enforcement's attention, and that they can be law-abiding members of your community. And that starts with restoring trust and confidence in law enforcement and that people are treated fairly. So I don't think that what you're addressing with respect to making jails even worse is likely to contribute to respect for the justice system.
What do you think, Connor? I mean, I get you've got this attitude. You've got rough people. You got to be tough, but they keep cycling back through. How do we get out of the cycle?
Well, first of all, she didn't address how many hours she spent in a patrol car. Next thing is that she's trying to put words in my mouth. I didn't say to make the jails inhumane or make them worse.
You said miserable and lousy. Some people might call that inhumane, but not worse. Okay.
If they're unpleasant, okay. Hey, Tom, let's say somebody T-bones your wife and she's there dead. That drunk driver. Do you want his butt to be yelled at in jail?
No, listen, I get it. But everybody's looking at this huge population we've got nationally and thinking this is just too much. How do we get out of this cycle where people come back and the jails are so crowded and you see the repercussions?
The only thing I can say is I don't have all the answers or I'd be, sitting up there where Barry is.
Yeah.
But, the thing is that Lori is stuck on platitudes. We've got services. We've got warm and fuzzy mental health and services and counselors and all that good stuff. And the people go through it. First of all, there's not enough. We need about 1,000 times more people to handle all the people that are either
yep.
on drugs or on drugs and crazy. But
Connor, I think we got the perspective, and I really appreciate your calling in with it because you're out there dealing with it. Everybody's trying to fix their piece of the puzzle here or grapple with it. Judge White, you're listening there in Milwaukee. You hear our deputy calling in from Tulsa, and, you know, he says it's got to be rough, and you talk about services, but they're not there, and this sort of warm and fuzzy attitude won't cut it. What do you say? You've witnessed a lot of this in your career.
Absolutely, and I can empathize with him as having been a federal prosecutor before I became a judge over two decades ago. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is that we are one of the few nations on earth that still have the constitutional premise that people are innocent until proven guilty. Mm-hmm. The jail, the purpose of jail has sort of gotten misconstrued because of the lack of resources. We've sort of relied on, it's not just over-reliance, but also a misuse of jail. The purpose is not for punishment. It is to make sure that people show up to face the accusation that the state has brought against them, and that if they can safely be released, we evaluate the risk associated with releasing them pending the outcome. Will they tamper with witnesses? Will they not follow the conditions of the bail? And so the purposes have gotten misconstrued. Just because this is a sort of a sanctuary for the communities across America to sort of hold people for a period of time for an unjust reason. And I think that it just compounds the problem, and we can't see that. I'm so happy that in Milwaukee, the reform effort is being led by all of the leaders of the justice stakeholders, because we can hear from the police agents. We can hear from the public defender and the district attorney and the judges. It's got to be a systemic response so that each one of us examines on that map, on that plan, what is it that we can do better? What are the decision points, and what are we relying upon for the conclusions that we draw? Are we looking at evidence-based practices in concluding, as the sheriff did in his comments? For example, in Milwaukee, a third of our jail population is on psychotropic medication.
Wow.
To help address mental health issues.
Wow.
And the other impact of this is not just a criminal justice. It is a fairness issue. In our system in Milwaukee, for example, a high number of African-Americans and Hispanics, they make up, for example, 41% of the population of Milwaukee County, but they comprise almost 70% of the local jail population. Mm-hmm. And it's a correlation between the high levels of people being contained and maintained in jail with poverty, mental illness, and other complicated challenges in life. It has nothing to do with the front end of our justice system says, if you're accused of something, you're innocent until proven guilty. And during this front end and middle and until the adjudicated process has been completed, our citizens in America, according to our state and federal constitutions, have a right to be free if they can be trusted to come back and answer to the call of the charge and they are not a threat to public safety.
It may be easy to warehouse them, but it can come back to bite in many ways, and it's not cheap. Michael in Omaha, Nebraska, thank you for calling, Michael. You're on the air.
Hello.
What do you know, Michael?
I'm calling about the comments from the gentleman in Oklahoma, a trooper.
Yes, sir.
He's got about half the equation, right? I mean, yes, jails, he says jail's supposed to be a hard place to be. I disagree. It's what gives my profession a real hard name these days. I'm a corrections officer.
Okay.
And everyone sees us as knuckle draggers, and our lives are supposed to make their lives miserable. And it's so far from the truth, it's kind of funny. We got people coming in that, you know, in Omaha, we don't have a strong mental health regional centers at all anymore.
Okay.
We used to have some places where people could go, and now we're getting people that are coming in repeatedly because, you know, they're coming off their meds. They don't have access to medication. They don't have reasonable funds for that. And it's not, you know, just having a bad place to keep you wanting to come from is not the answer. It's not there. It's corrections, not punishments.
Michael, we've got it, and I appreciate very much your call. I mean, Lori Garducci, are you confident as you encourage these communities to broaden the way they look at the problem, to look at services outside of jail, in a way you're looking to hand off a baton here or to bring in other services? What if those aren't there? I mean, the jails, we're hearing this, they're part of the picture. And maybe they're filling a role, as our Omaha caller says, because a lot of other services just don't exist. Will your reforms work if you don't have other changes around the criminal justice system?
So what you point out is what is has distinguished the approaches of places like Milwaukee and Philadelphia, which the judge and Keir have addressed, which is that it's a concerted and comprehensive effort to address this problem. So the city and the county are working together, the stakeholders, not just within the justice system, but it might be in the mayor's office as it is in New York City.
Net, though, are the resources there? If you change the jail population, does that free up resources that could be used for the mental health services, or does this require a net infusion of public resources to make these reforms work?
So what we're hoping to demonstrate that there are more cost-effective and efficient ways. So you're both going to reduce your jail population, so that will result in cost savings that can be shifted to other programs and services. And so what the grants that MacArthur have provided will enable the jurisdictions to determine where they can generate those cost savings, what changes in their policy practices and procedures will reduce the burden on the justice system, so that those savings can be invested in other programs and services, such as housing, mental health, education.
Keir, in a word, do you think this can work?
I think it can work if we all are really, we're all going to really take a look at ourselves, as the judge suggested, and really understand our policies and bend and be more flexible where we can and where we should.
You've got to get in there where you can and look for solutions. Jails right at the base of this pyramid of issues around criminal justice in this country, and communities now working on it. MacArthur Foundation helping make some of that possible. Lori Garducci is there at the Safety and Justice Challenge. Lori, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Keir Bradford Gray in Philadelphia, thank you so much.
Thank you, Tom.
And Chief Judge Maxine White in Milwaukee, thank you, Judge White.
Thank you, Tom.
This is On Point.